Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
History hinges on moments so small they could fit in the palm of your hand. Yet their consequences echo through centuries and shape the world we live in today. This is Historical What Ifs, where we explore the alternate timelines that could have emerged from a single different decision, a missed opportunity, or a stroke of luck that went the other way. Today's episode examines one of those pivotal moments and traces the extraordinary chain of events that might have followed if history had taken just one small turn in a different direction. Welcome to Historical What Ifs, Reimagining Pivotal Moments, Historical What Ifs.
Today, we are tackling a figure so monumental, so utterly dominant in his time, that it feels almost impossible to imagine the world without him. A man whose shadow stretches across two centuries.
We are, of course, talking about Napoleon Bonaparte. But our question today is a profound one. What if he had never risen to power? What if the ambitious young Corsican artillery officer had remained just that, a mere obscure officer who never seized his moment?
It's a question that has always fascinated me, personally. You study the French Revolution, and it's this whirlwind of chaos, ideology, and terror. Then, suddenly, this one man emerges and imposes order, or his version of order. The idea of letting that revolutionary storm play out without him is just, it's a tantalizing thought experiment.
For me, it's the sheer scale of it. The Napoleonic Wars weren't just wars. They were a continental transformation. They redefined borders, laws, and the very concept of nationalism. To pull that central character from the stage, well, it's not just a different play. It might be a different theater entirely.
Exactly. Does the French Republic survive? Does it consume itself? Or does another figure, perhaps one lost to history in our timeline, step into the vacuum?
And what of Europe? Without the threat of Napoleon's Grande Armée, do the old monarchies simply reassert control, crushing the revolutionary experiment once and for all? Or does the absence of that singular, unifying threat mean they never quite get their act together?
These are the questions we'll be diving into. We are about to explore the unseen revolution, a France and a world without Napoleon. The ripple effects are staggering, and the possibilities, well, they are endless.
Let's start there, with that vacuum. The directory, the government in the late 1790s, was, well, it was teetering on a knife's edge. It was corrupt, unpopular, and lurching from crisis to crisis. Napoleon didn't create the opportunity for a coup. The opportunity was screaming out for someone.
Right. It was a pressure cooker. So, if not Napoleon, who? Who are the other men on horseback waiting in the wings? Because there were others. History just tends to forget the runners-up.
The most obvious candidate, for my money, is General Moreau. Jean-Victor Moreau. He was a hugely popular and respected military figure at the time, arguably as skilled as Bonaparte in some respects.
But did he have the ambition? That's the key ingredient, isn't it? Napoleon had this insatiable drive, a political ruthlessness. Moreau always struck me as more of a soldier's soldier, not a political creature. Would he have even wanted to rule France?
That's a fair challenge. He was certainly more cautious. But imagine the political plotters of the day, like CAs. They were looking for a general to be their sword. They approached others before Napoleon. If they had leaned harder on Moreau, promised him glory and the salvation of the Republic, perhaps he could have been persuaded.
Persuaded to do what, though? Lead a coup and then, what, hand power back to the politicians? That seems naive. The moment a general takes power, the nature of power changes. I have a hard time seeing a Moreau-led France avoiding a military dictatorship, even if it's a softer, less expansionist one.
Or perhaps it fractures entirely. Maybe you don't get one man, you get a junta. a committee of generals. Moreau, Jourdan, maybe even Bernadotte, who in our timeline ended up King of Sweden of all things.
Oh, a directory of generals. Now that is a recipe for disaster. Talk about a clash of egos. How long before they turn on each other? A year? 18 months? France would descend into a civil war that would make the previous decade look like a garden party.
You think so? I wonder. Think of Lazare Carnot, the organizer of victory. He wasn't a frontline general, but he had immense respect and was a political heavyweight. Could a figure like him, a sort of civilian-military hybrid, have emerged as a stabilizing force? Someone who could command the army's respect without threatening to become a Caesar?
Carnot is an interesting one. He's the technocrat, the administrator. But could he inspire the kind of fanatical loyalty Napoleon did? Could he stand on a bridge under fire and turn the tide of battle with his sheer presence? I'm skeptical. The French people, after years of chaos, weren't looking for a brilliant administrator. They were looking for a savior.
So you believe a strong man was inevitable? That the Republic was doomed to fall into the hands of a dictator, and it was just a question of which one?
I think the conditions were overwhelmingly in favor of it. The political system was broken. The external threats from the monarchies of Europe were constant. The nation craved stability and glory. Without Napoleon, another figure would have risen to meet that craving. He might have been less brilliant, less ambitious, or, and this is a chilling thought, even more radical and bloody.
That is a genuinely chilling thought. The idea of someone even more radical. Are we talking about a resurgent Jacobinism? Someone who looks at the directory and says, the problem wasn't the terror. The problem was we didn't go far enough.
It's a definite possibility. The Jacobin spirit hadn't been extinguished. It had just been suppressed. Napoleon, for all his authoritarianism, was in many ways a moderate. He was a pragmatist. He wanted to reconcile the old France with the new. He brought back the émigrés. He signed the Concordat with the Pope.
Which a true radical would never have done. The break with the Catholic Church would have been permanent. You might have seen France solidify into a fiercely ideologically secular state in a way that would make it a permanent pariah. A kind of 19th century North Korea.
Well, maybe not that extreme. But the internal divisions would have been unhealable. The fault lines of the revolution would have become permanent trenches. And forget about his other great project of internal consolidation.
The Napoleonic Code.
The Napoleonic Code. Of course, it's his most lasting legacy. The idea of a single, rational, unified system of law for all of France.
And it wasn't just for France, was it? That's the key. He didn't just create it, he exported it. By force. The code was carried across Europe in the knapsacks of his soldiers. It swept away centuries of feudal law, aristocratic privilege, and clerical power in Italy, in the German states, in Poland.
So, without Napoleon the Conqueror, you don't get Napoleon the Lawgiver. At least not outside of France's borders. And maybe not even inside them. I mean, the revolutionary governments had tried and failed to create a unified code. It took Napoleon's singular authority to push it through, to sit in on the sessions and bang heads together.
So in this alternate timeline, does Europe's legal modernization just stall? Does Germany remain a patchwork of hundreds of tiny, archaic legal systems for another 50 years? Does the concept of civil equality, equality before the law, take that much longer to take root?
I think it has to. That's a ripple effect that is just immense. We think of the wars as his main impact, all blood and glory. But the spread of that code, the idea that your rights don't depend on which side of a river you were born on, or whether you were a first or third son, that was arguably more revolutionary than the guillotine.
It also re-entrenched some less progressive ideas. It was famously terrible for the rights of women, cementing the father as the absolute head of the household.
Oh, without a doubt, it was a bourgeois, patriarchal document. but coming from the chaos of feudalism, it was a gigantic leap. And without a figure with Napoleon's authority to impose that kind of sweeping, top-down reform, what do you get instead? A slow, piecemeal evolution? Or does the old system just calcify?
It feels like you lose a catalyst. A harsh, often brutal catalyst, but a catalyst nonetheless. You might get a France that is less of a threat to its neighbors militarily, but you also get a Europe that remains older, more traditional, and more legally fragmented for much, much longer.
And that fragmentation has real consequences. It hinders economic development. It entrenches local aristocracies. It might even delay the rise of nationalism. After all, what is a nation? It's a people under a common law. Napoleon, ironically, helped create his own enemies by giving the Germans and Italians the very tools of statehood they would later use against France.
And that is the ultimate mind-bending irony of the whole man, isn't it? The great centralizer. The man who forged a singular French identity inadvertently becomes the father of German nationalism. He gives them a common enemy, a common cause. He literally dissolves the Holy Roman Empire, forcing them to rethink who they are.
He kicks over a 1,000-year-old anthill and is then surprised when the ants organize themselves in a new and terrifying way. It's fascinating. So when we pull back, when we look at the whole picture we've painted, I'm left with this profound sense of a trade-off.
A trade-off? How so?
Well, on one side, you have our timeline. A timeline with Napoleon. It means, what? 2 decades of near-constant continent-spanning warfare. Millions dead, from the snows of Russia to the plains of Spain. Unimaginable devastation. But it also means the Napoleonic Code. The death of feudalism in much of Europe. The spark of modernity, however brutally delivered.
Right. And on the other side, in our what-if world, you likely avoid that scale of bloodshed. The monarchies of Europe probably squabble amongst themselves, but you don't get that singular existential threat that forces them into these massive coalitions. The world is probably more peaceful, at least for a while.
But it's also a more stagnant world. A world where the legal and social reforms of the revolution remain penned up inside France's borders, if they even survive there. A Germany of 1,000 tiny principalities, an Italy of divided kingdoms. It's an older world for longer.
And I find myself genuinely torn on which is, I don't know if better is the right word, but which is preferable. Is it better to have that violent, revolutionary catalyst that accelerates history, or a slower, perhaps more humane, but definitely more delayed evolution?
I think, and this is just my final take, I think I lean towards the world without him. The human cost of the Napoleonic Wars was just too staggering. I have to believe that the ideas of legal equality and national identity were powerful enough to emerge on their own, without needing to be spread by the bayonet.
See, I'm not so sure. I think I land on the other side. I look at the calcified monarchies of the 18th century, and I suspect that without that profound, terrifying shock to the system, they might have clung to power for another century. The change would have come, but it might have been even bloodier, a story of a dozen sputtering failed revolutions instead of one great, terrible explosion.
A war to end all wars that just created the next one.
And we haven't even touched on the Americas. Without Napoleon, desperate for cash, there is no Louisiana Purchase. Does the United States ever become a continental power? Or does a French empire persist in the heart of North America? That's a whole other cascade of consequences.
Oh my goodness. The world map becomes completely unrecognizable. It really does come down to it, doesn't it? The story of one man. One life. And removing it doesn't just change the story. It changes the language the story is written in. The shadow he cast was so immense, it's impossible to truly know if the world standing outside of it would have been brighter or just dimmer. the butterfly effect of history reminds us that the world we know today is just one of countless possibilities, shaped by moments of chance, choice, and consequence that could have easily gone another way. This has been Historical What Ifs, where every episode reveals how fragile our timeline really is, and how different decisions by our ancestors might have created an entirely different present. Understanding these alternate possibilities doesn't just satisfy our curiosity. It helps us appreciate how remarkable it is that we ended up in this particular version of history.